Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Criterion
Close Up.
I am Mark Kearney. I'm here with Aaron West, and we have a special guest today, Keith Enright. Hello, Keith.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Really glad to be here.
Yeah, glad you're here, man. That Aaron West voice that you heard, that's Redneck Aaron. We replaced regular Aaron with Redneck Aaron. So,
yes, I do live in the South, but so I that's really the only voice I can do because I'm surrounded by it. So
I'm quite uncomfortable right now.
Redneck Aaron comes out once in a while, so we're glad to have you here.
No deliverance here.
So today we're going to be talking about, this is a special Criterion close-up because we do this once a month. We do a Criterion close-up episode where we take out something about the Criterion collection and have a discussion. And we're really excited to have Keith here with us today. Keith, you have a Criterion completion blog. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this actually started about... probably about July of 14, I was having a conversation over Facebook with Dave Blakesley, and we were kind of talking about how there's such a plethora of sites out there and blogs that talk about the actual movies within the collection, you being a couple of them already. And I was kind of jokingly saying to Dave that, I didn't know really what I could add to the conversation, and I kind of made a joke like, I could make a Criterion completion blog where every week I post the or Facebook page where every week I just post my new releases and say, hey, I'm complete again for the week. And Dave wrote back and he said, well, I joined that. And so that's where it started about 15 months ago. And about 5 weeks ago, because of Redneck Aaron here, you know, when he started his Criterion blogathon with the other two bloggers, I really felt like that was kind of my kick in the pants to start up a web blog as well. And so I did that about 5 or 6 weeks ago at CriterionCompletion.com. And kind of as in with my original conversation with Dave, I'm kind of doing everything but talking about the movies themselves. As I said, there's many people out there doing that very, very well. And I just wanted to talk about the company and the things that they do and the ephemera that's out there about them. And I'm about 15 posts in now. It's kind of random right now, but my intention over time is that they'll all start to get categorized together, and it'll just become kind of a encyclopedia, so to speak, of everything that goes on at and around Criterion, and much less focus on the actual movies themselves. Nice. Although we all love those.
Yeah, it's a great site, Keith. I really like it. It's the best. I mean, you've been prolific already, and it's the best site I've seen on, I'd say, the history of the Criterion collection. Though it's very impressive.
Yeah, I think each post, I think I've learned something new, and you know, I follow this stuff every day, really. So, and by the way, Keith, right. one correction: I think you said blog before, but you meant a Facebook group.
The original was the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a closed group, but if you just search for Criterion Completion on Facebook and request, I'll let you in pretty darn quick, unless I look at your page and it's nothing but troublesome content, so to speak. But I've only had a couple of those, and we have about 140 members right now, and you know, I wouldn't mind it being a little bigger, but I like having this the focus of a smaller group. So if you want to come on in.
And you know, on that topic, I run a group called Foreign Film Classics, which is a little bigger than Keith's, and so if you're interested, feel free to log in there. But yes, we screen people very, very carefully. I don't know how we compare to you guys, but we probably let in half the people we get that apply.
I would say, I don't know about that. You let me in, but...
Well, have you looked at Facebook lately?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So tying into, really, Keith's blog, his site, we thought that, talking today, we wanted to do for our Criterion close-up, talking about Criterion completion and really what I would call the cult of collecting, a little alliteration there. We're going to talk about some of how we came to Criterion and what got us into collecting these gorgeous films, and even a little discussion about what it's like to appreciate film but also collect film. So I hope folks find that interesting. But before we get into that, we have a few items, some thank yous and news, of course, as we always do on the show. So a few thank yous to mention.
Yeah, we have a bunch, actually. I think last week was probably the most vocal response to an episode, or this week, for our 12 Angry Men and Single Take locations. So we did ask people to suggest other films, and I didn't write them down. There were so many in one location. Just off the top of my head, I remember Tape was one, Secret Honor was another one, and then there was 1776 was one. But there were probably at least a couple dozen of really good ones. So thank you guys, for everybody that responded on Twitter and Facebook and the blog. Yeah. That was really
love
really
the
great.
Feedback. Thank you.
Yeah, and please keep that up. We I think we respond to a lot of it. If we miss you, we apologize, but we try to. Some specific thank yous. This is I think every show so far we've thanked Ryan Gallagher.
All right,
Ryan, our man. He. On his latest newsstand with David, and actually just David this week, he gave a shout out to a few blogs, and he thanked us, or he shouted out us, and I think he called us, speaking of prolific, he called us very prolific, because we're at episode, well, now we're at 7, we were at 6 then, so again, I think it's, but I think we're on this like perpetual thank loop, like we thank him,
right.
He thanks us.
So back to you.
One of us is going
to. Back to you, Ryan, your turn next.
One of us throwing a thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, I think it'll probably stop pretty soon. Yeah. But we love Ryan, so we'll always talk about him. Also, I want to thank James from Wrong Reel podcast, which was my first podcast. I've talked about it before. He's been a good mentor. Gives me some great feedback behind the scenes, and not just me, but us. You know, for the entire cast, and it's very valuable. And I recommend you check out his site. The style is a little different. I mean, it's about film geeks, but it's everything. It's art film. It's comic book film. It's a different energy. There's profanity, so anybody that's driving in a car with children, don't listen to
earmuffs.
James. Yeah, earmuffs. Also, Paul, who is a guest and is a friend on Twitter, he's also given me some great comments. We also have Guillaume, who is a friend on Twitter, and he has... engaged with us pretty well. He sent out a flurry of tweets. I think he was the first guy that sent out a flurry of tweets from the last episode. So he is, I think he's in Ireland, but I think he's French. I mean, his name's Guillaume.
he friended me this morning on Twitter, and he certainly looks like it's a lot of French-centric stuff there.
Cool.
Yeah, he's really, I've actually been a Twitter friend with him for probably... few months, if not longer, and he's a really fun character. He does kind of critique our pronunciation. So from here on out, Guillaume, we're going to call you Guillaume.
Nice.
Yep.
Just kidding. There's also some iTunes reviews. You want to talk about those, Mark?
Sure. So, yeah, this is a little bit of yay us feedback, and really excited to see these. We've been asking for these, and we just love to see it, and we just wanted to call out some of the really nice comments that folks had. We're up to 7 reviews, all 5 stars, so thank you for, you know, all the just 5-star reviews. We don't want anything but... but we had some really, really nice ones. One was called Best Film-Related Podcast I Have Heard. That was from Mark Mayer on iTunes.
That's high praise, and thank you. But
yeah, we really, really appreciate it.
I would beg to differ. I think we're good, but we're not best yet. I'd say there are a couple ahead of us, but we're aspiring to be there.
We're working on it. And, you know, and this review from Mark, a great first name, by the way, is he was just talking about how it's important films that really matter, not the local Cineplex nonsense from Hollywood. And so, you know, I do appreciate some of what Hollywood does, but, you know, it's really what we wanted to do. We love Criterion, and feel like we maybe hit a niche for folks that if you want to get into some international film. The other review we wanted to call out was one that just said a great listen. And this was called out by Cole Roulain, I believe it is. And Cole said, similar to that, you know, it's a real treat if you like international cinema, a great discussion delivered in a low-key style that makes me look forward to each episode. So we appreciate that. I mean, we do this weekly and love doing it. And it's great to see that feedback. Like I said, that yay, yes, it just makes you feel good. So thank you very much, everyone.
Yeah, and the iTunes reviews are really just the tip of the iceberg. You know, there were some really nice comments on the blog, on Twitter. So So thank you. And if, and again, I think we've said it each episode, if you get a moment, please review us on iTunes. Maybe we'll give you a shout out, and it does help in some mysterious algorithmic way. It gets us more exposure. So thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And don't get too excited. All the ones next week will be for my family. So.
One
That's
star.
That's fine. We'll take it. As long as it's five stars. So we have a little bit of scheduling to talk about.
Yeah, well, a little housekeeping just in general. We are, one thing that people have been following along the show based on the schedule. If you go to criterionblues.com/podcast, you'll see a list of, I've been trying to keep it at about five or six upcoming shows. And I know some people actually have been watching the films along with us or ahead of the cast. So just one scheduling note, we are swapping Hiroshima Mon Amour for Moonrise Kingdom. So next week will be Hiroshima. Following week will be Moonrise Kingdom.
So a couple of just quick corrections I wanted to mention. Last week on the show, I talked about the IMDb top 250 films. We talked about it, and I mentioned that Pulp Fiction was in the top five, but really The Dark Knight is actually number four. So I just wanted to plug that in there. The thing with that list, too, is, you know, it's obviously, I don't know how much stock I'd put in it, and it's always changing because the ratings change. So just wanted to mention that.
I'm actually personally disappointed that you did not memorize the 250 before coming on that show.
I'm off the show. I'm done.
Next time, you need to be out, spout out Rotten Tomatoes, Sight and Sound, everything. BFI.
Or, Encyclopedia.
AFI, excuse me.
And the other correction is, I just mentioned we had forgotten that last December the Kenosha Eclipse set was released in December. So just wanted to include that.
But it actually contributed to our thesis. We said that it was a light month, so last December was three releases and an eclipse. So that was a pretty light month, and that will lead us to where we're going in a couple segments. So
yeah. So getting into the new segments, again, just wanted to mention there's that big unadvertised Criterion sale over at Amazon, and it continues. So I'd recommend, you know, folks, follow DVD Beaver's newsletter because he does a lot of calendar release updates. So if you go to the DVD Beaver site, sign up for the newsletter. He's often will post emails. He'll put it to his site. This is Gary Tooze's site. He'll put a list of the titles on sale, and he'll also send you an email, which is great. You can also track them. I often go to Blu-ray.com, and if you go to the Best Blu-ray Deals link and then choose Criterion from the All Studios dropdown, you'll see a list of the titles, and I think it includes all of them that are currently on sale.
So. And I'm going to put that link in the show notes, and you'd actually be – I looked at it over the weekend, and there's far more than I expected to be on sale. I mean, there's just a ton of things on sale, so it's massive.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Thanks, Amazon.
Yeah.
I've done September, October, and I'm going to do November soon. It just seems like it's almost too easy to do.
One-click ordering.
Shows up on your doorstep.
It sure does, 2 days later.
So, and we want to talk about some sadder news with the passing of William Becker, one of the founders of what we're talking about here. And so wanted to pass it over to Keith first to talk a little bit about this sad news this week.
Yeah, thanks. You know, when William Becker died last weekend, I immediately kind of had a visceral reaction as kind of a passing of the torch, so to speak, in the first maybe 75 years of art house cinema. I think one of the things that I was pretty surprised at was how many people who are really into Criterion, their reaction was, who is this? And, you know, over at my Criterion Completion blog, I'm in the middle of kind of doing the history of Criterion. I've only gotten through the beginning days with the Voyager Company, but this kind of dovetails into what I'm going to be doing with that a bit later on. But William Becker is, from what I've found over the past years, and of course focusing on it recently, he was quite the character. Of course, we all heard that he died last week. He was 88 years old, died of kidney failure. It sounds like from what we've read, there was quite a life that he led. One of the things I want to correct right up front is I've seen a lot of articles that are sort of true, but really aren't. You know, William Becker and Saul Terrell, his partner up until 1986 when he died, they did not co-found Janus or Criterion. That's said a lot within the articles that I've read. That just didn't happen. He kind of, the two of them, but I think especially William, had the wherewithal to take two companies that were kind of in their infant stages and bring them into what they are today. I'll get into that in a second. But William Becker, he's from St. Louis, Missouri. Started college at the age of 15 in St. Louis. I forget the name of the university, but also went on to Duke and did graduate from Harvard, I believe, in the late 40s. He was a Rhodes Scholar in literature. He was very, very, very into literature. And in fact, there's an eponymous library at Wadham College in England with his name on it. One thing that I didn't know about until I really focused in on a little bit of research was he was a theater critic at the Hudson Review in the 1950s. I had never heard of the Hudson Review, but I looked that up, and it's still going today. In fact, they had a nice article in there a few days ago about the restoration of the Apu trilogy. So kind of a full circle thing there. Even if we've never been to a Broadway play, I think we're all familiar with the yellow and black and white playbill program that you get when you go to a play. That was started in the 1880s, but while he was at the Hudson Review, he actually, working with another partner, purchased Playbill in the late 1950s. Wow. And from what I can tell, had that until about 1974 and then sold it to their current owners, who obviously have taken it to greater heights. I mean, you can even go to local theater. I can go to local theater here in Minneapolis, and they'll even have a playbill. So, you know, William Becker, he was not a director like Saul Terrell was. I think many of us might know that Saul Terrell, his partner, won an Academy Award for the Paul Robeson documentary that it did that's actually in the Robeson set. But William Becker was much more into the financial side of it. In fact, a couple articles have noticed that William Becker considered the two headed Janus coin that they use for their logo that we've all seen a million times, that stood for art and commerce. And it's definitely something that I think he did very, very well. You know, we could talk about maybe Criterion struggling maybe a little bit in the days of waning physical media. I don't necessarily agree with that, and I think that that's something that they've always had to kind of juggle with Janus and Criterion, is how do you do this in a distribution model that you actually make money, you know, distributing things that you love.
Yeah, I would just, you know, to say to that too, Keith, I mean, everything that I read about William was that, you know, he was what he really brought to this was he was a shrewd businessman, but he was also an art fan, you know, so it seems like he really did, from a business standpoint, he did something that he loved in working with the art of film and building it, you know, helping build up to what it is today in Janus and Criterion. So.
Right. And if you die at your home in Southampton on Long Island, you probably did it all right.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also the father of Peter Becker, who is the president currently, and Saul is the father of Jonathan Terrell, who is the CEO currently. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's still a family business, and I think that the tastes are still intact.
Oh,
so,
yeah, absolutely.
But it was a very, very sad passing. I didn't know I knew some of that, but I didn't know nearly the breadth of that. But I did miss him too, and actually on the newsstand, David pointed out that Criterion had favored one of his tweets, and actually they favorited one of mine too, and that just doesn't happen. So I was very, you know, I was very moved by that. Even, you know, lots of people favor tweets, but still, it was more just acknowledgement that they saw the fans. You know,
absolutely,
they were in our hearts, I guess.
Absolutely. So yeah, you know, they actually purchased Janus in 1965. You know, that Janus had its first initial successes with, you know, importing Bergman and Fellini movies, but it had kind of fallen off by the mid 60s. And when Saul and William bought it in 1965, actually their first major purchase was, I found this to be quite interesting, their first major purchase was Beauty and the Beast, Orpheus, and Les Visiteurs de Soie. Another early purchase in that same year was from Dai, if I'm saying that correctly, for some Kurosawa, Ichikawa, and Ozu. So, you know, once they took over the company in 1965, you could really see some of the focus of what would come over the next 50 years. 1965 is also the year I was born, so I don't like saying 50 years. But and then, of course, just to wrap it up, you know, as I said, William Becker and Saul Terrell did not form the Criterion Collection. The Criterion Collection was brought to them by Bob and Eileen Stein in 1985, when they already had the rights to King Kong and Citizen Kane for Laserdisc. And they're the ones that came to Janis and said, hey, we've got this great new format that we can really push some of your films on. And they actually, at that point, Janis and the Criterion Collection formed the Voyager Company, of which the Criterion Collection was the Janus side of the house. But for many years, the Voyager CD-ROM business was actually more the focus of that company. That all came to an end, and they split up in 1997, wherein Janus took over the Criterion Collection. William effectively retired, and then Peter and Jonathan took over the company right at the beginning of the DVD era, and that's where we are today. And of course, William was involved quite a bit throughout the years, but now it's time to pass on the torch, and I think we're in good hands.
Yeah, his sons have done a phenomenal job. I think we'd all agree. We wouldn't be here today without the fathers or the sons. So hearts go out to Criterion, everybody in the office. You know, they were a day late in announcing, which I didn't care about. I thought that was, you know, no big thing. So, yeah, hopefully somebody from Criterion hears this or understands that the fans are thinking of them this week. So,
we absolutely are. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to mention a quote that really stuck out to me from William Becker. He said, "Nothing beats seeing a new generation of audiences get blown away by a Bergman or a Fellini, a Renoir or a Truffaut." And I just love that quote because I think he really was that forward-thinking. And we'll talk about it a little bit too, but I kind of have a sense of, you know, these films will continue to get rediscovered, and Criterion and Janus will continue to be relevant.
Absolutely.
So moving into, there was an interview this week with the CEO of Jonathan Terrell we mentioned earlier on Crowdsource Studios site.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was... Like you said, Crowdsource Studios, which was conducted by Bobby Law, and they were all new to me, although Bobby has reached out, seems like a nice guy. I thought it was an interesting interview. Some have criticized the audio quality. I didn't think it was that much of an obstacle. I mean, really, it was Terrell on the phone in the offices, and I think Bobby probably had to call him from an iPhone, record locally, who knows, but...
No.
Yeah, it was listenable. I did take a few notes, and actually that's an interesting segue, is the Terrells and the Beckers. You know, Terrell was very open about certain things, about his taste especially, and I did detect a certain difference in taste, not necessarily bad taste in any way, but I think he and Becker have a little bit different taste in film. There's a lot of talk about the In-Laws, Shampoo, Princess Bride, which they want to get on the collection. And he also mentioned that in order to get in the collection, somebody in the building has to champion the film. And he mentioned that he championed It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Was that enough mads? I forget how many. All right. You know, that release, I thought it was actually a great release. I'm not a huge fan of the movie, but there was a little flack when it came out. And it might be seen as maybe more classic mainstream. So maybe Terrell's taste lean in that direction. Although, you know, he mentioned some other films that I thought were good. And he apparently he's going to have Peter Becker on as well in the future, although given the recent passing of his father, that's probably on the back burner. He did. There were a couple things I noted. The suggestion box, I think we probably all used it, and probably a lot of listeners have used it. He said that they do look at every suggestion, but it's very uncommon for them to get a suggestion that's not on their radar, which I thought was interesting. And of course, they never respond to those, but they do look at every single one. So I guess partly I'd encourage you to use it. Partly, maybe if you think probably anything you are going to suggest have been suggested before, but maybe it's a volume thing. They want to know what's going to be taken well.
Right.
There were some comments about him going public, too, and that I thought that was really interesting. He said that going public would change the foundation of the company, and he wouldn't want to do it. And to me, that is great, because when you're public, you have to answer to stockholders. You know, you'll have to put out every, you know, mainstream releases. And I think the quality of the content, you know, some of the rare discoveries would dissipate. He was asked about mainstream films, and I think the interviewer didn't really. I think their definition of mainstream was a little different. You know, I think I don't want to speak for him, but Jonathan said that the closest they get to mainstream is Wes Anderson, and a lot of people would argue that Wes Anderson's not really mainstream, although a lot of Criterion fans would argue that he's too mainstream. So, and in fact, that's a topic we're going to tackle in a couple weeks, which I'm looking forward to. So yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a good listen. It's an hour.
Well, I just one point on that. As I was talking about William Becker and the Janus coin, it certainly struck me that if you take the art and commerce sides of that coin, that you can really kind of see where Jonathan and Peter fit on that coin. Jonathan certainly seems to be more on the commerce side, and Peter is definitely on the art side.
So we saw on Twitter there was an announcement of a film. This is actually from the daughter of Samuel Fuller, Samantha Fuller, that A Fuller Life is coming to Criterion in 2016. Again, this was out on Twitter. Samantha Fuller, she was an actress in Sam Fuller's film A White Dog, and of course she's the director of this film. And it's about friends and admirers of the director Sam Fuller read from his memoirs. It's a new 4K restoration that is out there of the film Pickup on South Street. So I'm thinking maybe Masters of Cinema has already released that, so maybe this would be an extra on that Criterion disc. I'm not sure if it'll actually be, you know, its own release, but we'll see.
That's my speculation. It could be, though. As we're gonna about to talk about, we have Burroughs coming out, and that doesn't seem like one that might fit the collection. So you never know.
Yeah, never know.
Yeah, it seems most likely.
And another restoration item to mention, Aaron.
Yeah, Film Forum, and as a matter of fact, I've been to Film Forum and I saw a Pickup on South Street there, so nice. That's an interesting connection. That was not intentional, but and I saw the 4K restoration there. But Film Forum in New York City is having a De Sica retrospective, and they're showing a number of his works, a number of Italian works, period. But one thing they're showing is Bicycle Thieves, they labeled it as a new restoration. So I don't know if that's the one that that was. I think did that play Cannes Classic? I forget.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Either way, it's they say new restoration, and oftentimes those that play in New York, when they get there, that means a home video release is maybe not imminent, because, like I said, I saw Pickup in June. So, but could be in the horizon. So I think there's a good chance that we see Bicycle Thieves in 2016. That's my opinion.
It's a good indicator.
Yep. So lastly, for the news segment, we just wanted to talk very briefly about the December releases. We'll talk briefly. We'll have some additional links within the show notes to some trailers. And as folks know, it's often a light month, and is so again this time in that we only have four releases, but some good releases here. Firstly, we have on December 1st, we've got a Blu-ray upgrade, the only one of the month, of Downhill Racer. This is a Michael Ritchie-directed film. He's also known for Fletch, The Golden Child, The Bad News Bears. His only film in the collection. It's my number 494. This one is known, I think, for, I haven't seen it, but known for its alpine location photography, Fast and Furious imagery per the site, and stars a young Robert Redford. So this looking forward to watching this.
And Gene Hackman, too.
Absolutely, Gene Hackman. I've seen it. I bought the original DVD when it came out. You know, I might call it one of their slighter releases over the years if I have to qualify that. I don't usually like to do that. But it definitely has a late 60s, early 70s feel. You know, it's an American movie, but a lot of it is filmed in Europe, and it does kind of have a European feel to it. I've read that Michael Ritchie was a big fan of Ken Loach at the time, and it really does kind of feel like somewhat like a cast or something. But yeah, the skiing scenes are quite impressive, especially for the camera work that probably would have had to been done back then, and almost has a Wild World of Sports feel to it in some ways. So yeah, I recommend it. It's a good movie.
Cool.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Next is December 8th, we've got Speedy. So this is going to be the third film starring Harold Lloyd that will be in the collection. First, we got Safety Last, and then The Freshman last year. So it's a new spine number 788 from 1928. Looking forward to this. This is actually the last silent feature to star Harold Lloyd, considered one of his best. He reprises his role as the glasses character. So this one also includes it's on the site, so I guess it's not a spoiler, Babe Ruth cameo in the film. So it's a new 4K digital restoration, includes an audio commentary. This one's pretty stacked. There's also a Bumping into Broadway, a 1919 Harold Lloyd two-reeler, newly restored with a new score. And also just Speedy includes a musical score by Carl Davis from 1992. So looks like this could be a really nice release.
Yeah, you know, I really love the cover too. And
it's nice.
Yeah. In fact, I love all the Harold Lloyd covers, but I think this is my favorite.
So. And Mark, it's also not a spoiler because it came out 88 years ago.
I know. I'm so sensitive to spoilers, but yeah. So also on the 8th, we get Jellyfish Eyes. So this is probably, I would say, the most controversial release of the month. And like I said, we will include a link to the trailer. Folks want to check it out. I'd say that's probably your best intro to this film. This is from Japan, from 2013, actually was being toured by Janus Films this year. My local film society, I'd suggested we pick it up, but didn't happen, unfortunately. From director Takashi Murakami, his only other directing credit is for a Kanye West video, I believe. So, but he's known, he works in fine arts media, painting and sculpture, and he also what is conventionally considered commercial media, so fashion, merchandise, and animation. And I like to see, he's known for blurring the line between high and low arts. So, hey, you know, we could use a little more low arts in the Criterion Collection. Why not?
Yeah, the trailer is off the chain, I guess, is the, well, the kids probably don't say that, but it's well, and by the way, I should add, you said the trailers, we'd link to them. If you go into the Criterion Blues show notes, they're all embedded there, as well as the posters, and Speedy doesn't really have a trailer, because like Keith said, it's somewhere between 88 and 100 years old, but I put a little clip in there, but yeah, the trailer, it looks like it's like somewhere between Harry Potter, Where the Wild Things Are, and Pokemon.
That's a perfect yes.
and what I think is great, and it has made some people angry, is that on the disc is the trailer to Jellyfish Eyes 2, yeah. Which I think might be Criterion just trolling people. I love this trailer. Even I don't know if I'll like the film. I'm intrigued, but I want to see that Jellyfish Eyes 2 trailer.
There you go. So. Well, yeah. Put me in the non-vocal minority of people who haven't seen it and am reserving judgment until I do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is it's one of the, we haven't seen one of these for a while either. It's got a $30 MSRP, so come a 50% off sale. Of course, this is December, so it'd be sometime next year probably. You might be able to pick it up for $15. So
you might, cool. Yeah. So that's nice.
Lastly, on December 15th, we're getting Burroughs the Movie. This is from 1983. Again, new spine number, 789. This was Kickstarter funded, which I thought was interesting. I know Ryan mentioned this on the newsstand, wondering if this is the first Kickstarter funded film. This one is it's an intimate, revelatory footage of the singular author, William Burroughs, and poet, filmed over the course of 5 years. So it's a documentary from 83 by Howard Bruckner. And it was really, for a while, the stuff of legend, they said. Until Aaron Bruckner, it was thought lost, and Aaron Bruckner, the late director's nephew, discovered a print of it in 2011. And he kind of spearheaded the restoration. Brought to life from a remarkable crew of friends, including Jim Jarmusch and Tom DeSillo. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. It doesn't sound super exciting when you're talking about people just reading his memoirs, but I'm sure it's more interesting than it sounds.
Yeah, he's also he has a tie to the collection with Naked Lunch. He wrote that, he's a beat poet. Beat poetry is really not my thing, but I am married to an English professor, so I asked her. And I'd say he's probably the most prolific of the beat poets. It's arguable, but you could say he might be the most intelligent. He's a brilliant man, for sure, no doubt that. So I'm really enthused about this one. I like these little artist documentary portraits.
I am, yep, too. He's somebody I've always been intrigued by. I know I tried to read Naked Lunch when I was about 17. That was a failure. I'd always wanted to go back and try it again. Maybe this will be the one that gets that going for me. To me, he's always just been a trivia question of the guy who came up with the term Steely Dan. And we'll leave that at hit. Leave That's that right there. Naked Lunch always reminds me, reminds me of the classic Simpsons line where Bart and Milhouse went to see Naked Lunch and they walked out and said, "There's two things wrong with that title."
That's good.
That's funny. Good Simpsons reference.
So yeah, light month, but we didn't expect a huge month, and I think good things are coming in 2016. So
I thought it was
light on our bank accounts too, with all the spending we're doing this fall. So
yeah, with a half off sale in November, we kind of need a light December. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. They release something December 15th and leave the holidays alone. So
yeah,
with Burroughs, I thought it was interesting too. It looks like they're still working on some of the special features because it says more with a exclamation point. So that means there's probably more coming there.
More, you say.
So that's it for our first segment, news and updates. So we'll take a break and we're going to come back with part two, The Cult of Criterion Collecting. We are here, part two of our show today on Criterion Close Up. We're talking about the Cult of Criterion Collecting, as we're lovingly calling it. We could also call it Criterion Completion, we wanted to mention this is going to be a little bit of a personal part of the show. So we hope you appreciate it. When I was kind of thinking about this, talking about collecting Criterion, are we looking at this from a level of a film lover, a film collector, an art lover? And we're going to talk about that a little bit during this because I think there are some opinions regarding that. I'm also wondering, for our listeners, how many of our listeners, as we're talking, are going to be nodding their heads, kind of agreeing with us? Yeah. And then some people are just going to be kind of shaking their heads and being like, you guys are nuts. But frankly, I think we're going to have a lot of nodders on this show. So what we wanted to talk first, and again, mentioning this is a personal discussion, we want to talk first about the nature of collecting, how it kind of starts when you're young and you embrace collecting as you get older.
Well, for me, this started obviously early. I was the oldest of six kids, and growing up with six kids in the house, it was very hard to have something that was your own. It was a very, with eight people in the house, it's very socialist. Everybody has to share everything. And, just being able to have things that I could say, no, these are mine. Keep your hands off them. These are my loving little tchotchkes, so to speak. So I think that's where it started for me. And, I was probably a bit different. I never collected comic books or anything like that. The things that I collected as a kid, with varying degrees, I would say I was never a completionist on any of them, but I collected Hardy Boys books. I was a big beer can collector in the 70s, as was half the population.
Nice.
I had a lot of beer cans all over my room, which was really kind of hard for my mom to take, you know, a 14-year-old boy having all of that. But other things that I collected at that age, obviously a lot of vinyl. I collected a lot of records, you know, nice. Kind of took over my parents' record collection when they kind of just gave up listening to music at the age of 32 or something. I never understood that. But for my grandfather, I got a great collection of Hitchcock paperbacks from the late 60s, early 70s, when he used to slap his name on a lot of short stories. Collected those for a long time. Unfortunately, I don't, along with the beer cans, I don't even know what happened to them, unfortunately.
Oh, you don't have the beer cans anymore?
I do not.
Oh,
I think my mom tossed them.
That would look great on the shelf.
Wouldn't it, though?
I think that's a typical story. When your collection's gone, usually it's your mom, and as you get older, it's your wife that threw the stuff away.
Exactly.
My dad had a classic baseball card collection that mysteriously disappeared, and he talks about it, you know, at least once a year.
Oh, that's unfortunate. As I got a little bit older, I went through a real horror phase in the 80s. I collected Stephen King books, first edition hardbacks. In fact, I did that up till about a year ago until I just gave them all to my sister because I was done.
Wow.
Fangoria magazines, Famous Monsters of Filmland. Kind of a little late to that game, but I certainly did that as well. And then Criterion, we'll talk about the timing on that, but that's... Mm-hmm. You know, that's the one that has stuck. That's the one that I've actually doing as an adult and getting a lot of pleasure out of it.
Yeah, you know, I kind of share some of the, not the beer cans. I drank my share of beer, but I didn't. I collected them in my belly.
That's the fun
I'm still
part
collecting,
of collecting
actually,
beer.
Exactly. In fact, you're drunk right now. Is that what you're saying?
No, well, in a sense, actually. But actually, the nature of collecting, I think, is an interesting subject in that, and in fact, I'm sure some grad student has written some dissertation about, I guess, the capitalist nature, why we are driven to collect things, to material items. But and actually, I'd be curious to read a couple of those if they're out there. But yeah, I also was driven to collect stuff as a kid. I collected baseball cards. Pretty much incessantly, really all throughout my childhood. And what's crazy is I hate baseball now. So, but yeah,
right there with you.
I collected them and I would trade them and I saved them. I put them in those little white boxes. I put the good ones, like the rookie cards, in little sleeves. And yeah, actually I collected them. I ended up selling a lot of them during college, and I remember I had a second year Nolan Ryan card that fetched me a pretty penny. I mean, it was probably less than I spent on the third man, but but to a college kid, that was a lot of money back then. So
Aaron, are you saying Nolan Ryan funded your third man purchase? That's awesome.
Indirectly, in a way, yes.
What a nice guy.
and actually, like Keith, records, I'm a big music buff, and you know, I think of the movie High Fidelity is in a way, and the novel too, which is Nick Hornby. I can relate to that both with my music and my Criterion collecting. But of course, with music, the record went to CDs and now digital. And in fact, behind my studio, I think I mentioned this on another show, I have about a stack of about 100 CDs that I just haven't bothered to throw away yet. So
right.
It is interesting how we collect things and they hold less value to us over time. Now,
that's
Criterion, on the other hand, I don't expect to just stack and forget about. So, what about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the nature of collecting, I mean, I think of I think part of it is just a personality, and it may be something that you're born with. You just have that innate need to collect things, and you know, so you kind of scratch that itch throughout your life. I mean, for me, it's something maybe as you're growing up, you trade items, you know, like baseball cards. Maybe you play with them. I mean, I remember my dad saying he used to play with baseball cards. You know, play games. That's why they got creased and all that
right.
kind of thing. I also, you know, I think it's a nerdy thing. I remember Keith talking about this, you know, reaching out to the Criterion, or I think I said nerdy, but it's not just a nerdy thing. It's a social thing. And I think the more that we, get into this, you know, we connect via Facebook and other social media sites, we get to know that other people are just like us, and they're into the same thing. So, and you know, whether it's face to face or over social media, it's, you know, something that you get into. I mean, I'll just mention, I see it in my son now. He's a lot like me, and he collects Pokemon cards, mm-hmm. and he just loves, that's his favorite thing.
Sure.
You know, give him, he loves to play with them. He likes to read about them. So, you know, like I said, it might be kind of a natural thing.
So does that mean he's going to watch Jellyfish Eyes with you?
It depends on what it's rated. We'll see.
I think you'll be fine. I think I forgot. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Keith.
Oh, I was just going to interject that I think I forgot the most important one. For a period of time in my teen years, I collected Avon glass cologne decanters. And
wow.
Boy, I don't think... I'm sure that stuff turned to vinegar by now, but it was kind of smelled like vinegar then too. I don't know.
Wow.
That might have competed with the beer cans. So
I think so.
Jeez. Well, some of the things I got into, I was into Star Wars, He-Man and Transformers. I mean, it was, and of course I couldn't buy them myself. So it was whatever, you know, my parents would buy me. But I did collect comic books for quite a while. I was into superhero comics like Fantastic Four. I also got into the Star Wars resurgence with the Dark Horse stuff that came out with the prequels. I collected a number of Star Wars Expanded Universe and prequel items. So that was kind of the defining movie for my childhood. So I kind of revisited that a while back. It's still, all that stuff is still sitting in my basement, much to my wife's chagrin. I'm sure you guys can appreciate that. I did collect baseball cards for a while, especially during the time that they were worth nothing, you know, in the early 90s. I got into, speaking of Pokemon, I was big into Magic the Gathering, another collectible card game, you know, folks might be familiar mm-hmm. with. And then I collected too many CDs and vinyls. I worked at a record store. That was my high school and early college job. So it was a really cool job. The store was called Exile on Main Street, cool. a relation to the Rolling Stone album. Sure. And they still sell a ton of vinyl, get a lot of stuff from radio stations. So
them.
That was fun. And then I moved into, you know, of course, VHS, DVD, movies. I even had an early 1980s used Laserdisc player with a few discs that someone had brought into the, you know, the music store there. So that was a lot of fun. So anything else you wanted to, I mean, I think we kind of covered it. Anything else about kind of a personal history, you know, about collecting you wanted to mention?
Well, actually, one thing, I think there's sort of a fine line between collecting / hoarding. And in fact, yeah. One person collecting might be another person's hoarding. So I like to think of it as organized hoarding.
That's good. That's
yeah?
good.
Does that work?
Actually,
sure.
Actually, I have focused my collecting specifically on Criterion. I started buying Laserdiscs in 1995. I started buying DVDs in 1998. And, you know, there was a period where I was just, you know, buying every special edition of everything that came out. And, you know, I'm not the hugest fan of digital presentation or streaming, sorry. Mm-hmm. But I really have kind of allowed my film watching other than Criterion to be of a streaming nature. You know, the only thing that I do collect these days is Criterion, and you know, everything else I got rid of because it was hoarding for me. It's just there was just too much.
That's interesting. I'm actually different. I think Mark is too. I buy a lot of physical media. So
right, you know, Masters of Cinema, Arrow, you know, some of those other titles.
Yeah,
but
don't get me started on that.
Yeah, so it is interesting. I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, it's that we kind of talked about our personal history about collecting and, you know, getting into Criterion. So we wanted to talk a little bit more about that. And, you know, when did the Criterion bug really hit you? And what was your first purchase of Criterion? So I'll talk about it first. Mine was, I've got the Blu-ray here. I can show it to Aaron and Keith. Mine was Days of Heaven.
Beautiful.
So I had originally seen Seven Samurai as my first Criterion, but I really didn't know what it was all about. It was recommended by a friend who, there's a local video store that was near to him who had the Criterion collection. Being in Vermont, there wasn't a lot of that, but there was one store that did have a huge section. And he'd recommended Seven Samurai because he'd watched it and loved it. And I saw it, I loved it, didn't quite connect yet at that point.
Sure.
it wasn't until a friend of mine showed me Jules and Jim, I know I've mentioned on the show, where that really is what the where the Criterion is. So then I saw Days of Heaven, and that was really the one where, you know, I watched it with some friends, and folks know how gorgeous the Blu-ray is. That was it for me. You know, that of course that's that crane shot from the field was the, you know, as they show the house, that first shot was really what kind of started it for me. So that was my first purchase. It was around the time of a July Criterion 50% off sale. So from there, I started collecting just a few Blu-rays. And at this point, you know, I've collected other Blu-rays other than just Criterion. I mean, I really started with those before I got into Criterion, saw Days of Heaven. But, you know, at this point, I blame Criterion for my complete Blu-ray immersion. Mm-hmm. It's certainly all their fault.
Can we just blame Doug?
Sure.
Yeah, let's blame Doug. Okay.
Yeah, I've learned about this blaming Doug thing. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we came up with it last show. We just blame Doug for every problem.
We blame Doug, yeah. Yeah, actually, you want to take a guess at what my first Criterion was? Just the director?
Renoir.
Yep.
Must be.
You want to guess the spine number?
One.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Nice.
That's a good place to start.
My first one was Renoir. Of course, I grew up, my father collected Criterion Laserdiscs, and I think I've mentioned that before. So I had a young, exposure to the label, and those were groundbreaking as far as commentaries and special features. So I watched a lot of those. I remember as a kid on a weekend, sometimes I would just put on one of my dad's Laserdiscs and watch, immerse in a movie. So I had some artistic tastes. And I didn't buy Grand Illusion when it first came out, but I did buy it before it went out of print, thankfully. So, and I still have it, and I've played it a few times. And that's one of the first few films I really engaged with, and I still do. But yeah, mine is a little different. I did collect DVDs, and I bought a number. In fact, most of the out of print DVDs I have, I bought them, 15 years ago, like Le Corbeau, A Woman Is a Woman. And I'm sure there's more. I haven't looked, but I still have a lot. Oh, With an Old Eye, I have a lot of those. Scratch that. I just bought With an Old Eye DVD. Excuse me. So
organized hoarding, huh?
Exactly. So yeah, my collection built very slowly, and then during the transition to DVD, I was aware of Criterion. I loved them, and I bought just all types of DVDs. But I would more buy the Criterions as I saw a good deal, or if a movie struck me. And in fact, Days of Heaven is one that I bought on Blu-ray. I forget when it came out, but I saw it on sale, and I just, I had probably 40 or 50 at that point. For me, it really was a marriage of film and collecting. And then, well, little known fact, my wife won Jeopardy a year and a half ago. And probably by this point, I had about 100 titles. And I've since... Well, I asked Andrea, I said, can I buy the entire Criterion collection? And she said, yes.
Nice. Oh, she's a keeper, man.
She's great, yeah. We'll talk about levels of completion, but I did, go on a buying spree. As a matter of fact, I didn't actually use her Jeopardy money. It takes a very long time to get that, so I was responsible and a good husband, But yeah, that's actually, so it's really been a year and a half since I've been like a really serious collector, although I've listened to the Criterion cast for years. I've watched the, I've been, until then, I was more of a casual fan, like a lot of our listeners might be.
Sure.
All right. Well,
Keith, what was your first purchase?
It's shame time. Come on, Keith.
Come on now. my story is a bit different. I've already copped to being 50 years old this year. But I got into Laserdisc actually pretty late in the game. Like I said, I think about 1995. I still have a very nicely working Laserdisc player that I use quite often. But my first disc was Pink Flamingos on Laser, Criterion Edition. I'd love to see it back in the Blu-ray collection at some point, but we'll see. My second was Sling Blade. It was a very packed special edition on Laserdisc.
Sorry. That was my Sling Blade voice.
Boy, that's very close to your redneck voice. I don't know.
Fried potatoes.
But my first inclination that I was going to actually collect Criterion was in 2002. I was in a Best Buy. I picked up 8.5 on DVD. I looked at it. I said, I've always wanted to see this. And at that moment, I said, I'm going to collect these. And I've never stopped since. I had a few before that. I had the original Spinal Tap. I had the original Silence of the Lambs, RoboCop, you know, the ones that were much more mainstream. But it was 8.5 that finally made me say, I'm going to do this. It took me 4 years to get complete. So I was complete in 2006. I had to buy very few crazily priced out-of-print discs, which I'm very happy about. And I've just been on maintenance mode ever since. Interesting thing was I bought a lot of them from this used DVD store over in St. Paul here in Minnesota. And a lot of them, even though they said they were used, were still in the plastic. And about 2009, this place got shut down by the FBI. So
yikes.
I'm going on record, but I will still deny it, that I probably bought a few hot Criterion Collection discs over the years, although not directly.
I got Gimme Shelter from Amazon. It was pirated.
Really?
So yeah. And I actually had a rough time getting it exchanged because it was one of those from their warehouses. So
well, these weren't pirated, but they were. I think people were taking them out of stores and reselling them to this place.
Sure. Yeah, used DVDs.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. So we want to talk a little bit about kind of what we're calling the mentality of collecting. So, you know, as far as we're concerned, we think it's okay to be a collector, but some folks may think there is kind of a stigma to collecting. You know, to us, it's a marriage of interest. It's a film loving and also collecting. But I know, and we've seen this on some of the forums, where folks may say, well, you're a collector. You're not really a movie lover. You're just collecting these things just to collect them. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, you know, I've been a film buff really for the majority of my life, and I think my collecting comes from being a film buff. I just love film, and I started collecting DVDs a long, long time ago, and that upgraded to Blu-ray because I like the best presentation. I also like the best package, and Criterion, of course, is more than delivers on a relatively consistent basis. So I would say that it is, you mentioned marriage of interest. For me, it's essentially a marriage of interest. And I've found that Criterion's, more often than not, they get it right. And I completely buy into it. So yeah, I guess I do. I love film. I buy lots of film, but I really gravitate towards Criterion because not only do I think they do the best job of curating, but I think they do the best job with presentation, and it's very rare that I will dislike a Criterion or think it's not. Even if I dislike the movie, I still think that it's a worthwhile addition. And you know, on my shelf, you know, The Big Chill, for example, I didn't like that movie that much, but I thought but I think it's also a very much a zeitgeist movie for 1984 or whatever year it was. So you know, if a friend comes by and wants to watch it, great, it's there, and it does represent an era. That one probably won't get as many spins as Grand Illusion, but that's okay.
You're right, of course.
Right.
Well, you.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, I mean, I think of that same thing. I've had experience. I've never seen a bad Criterion movie, and I've had instances where I haven't loved one, but I've watched some of the special features, and it just deepens my appreciation for what I just watched. So you kind of get an understanding of why the film was curated. I would mention, too, as far as the mentality of collecting, you know, for me, there are a lot of streaming options for, you know, you've got Netflix, Amazon, Fandor. There's so many options out there, and you can, you know, add your subscription, but you can't get everything. And I guess maybe that's kind of a collector mentality, but to me, I still buy, of course, Criterion Blu-rays and other items, DVDs and whatnot, because the, you know, what's available for selection keeps changing. Mm-hmm. And there's no, you know, really good option for, to, you know, stream all films. And I think part of that is, you know, a lot of it is just the film rights. So within this, and we talked about it, Criterion is a curator of just great, great films. And so by collecting these, I have those films that I can watch anytime. I can also, look at the special features and just get a sense of how it places within the film canon. And I even think of, I feel like I'm collecting art. And so if my kids ever get into film to the level that I am, they will have a great collection of art for them to review. And, if they don't get into it, then someone else will enjoy that at some point. So
like jellyfish eyes, right?
That's right.
Of course, yeah.
Well, I have two sons, ages 20 and 25, and I've been telling them that for years, and they're still in the eye-rolling stage of of looking at my collection. But we'll see what happens. But I like what you say about it being, a marriage of collecting and film love. I get my love of film from my mother. She's been gone a long time now, but we used to watch a lot of movies together, especially in the early 80s when we got our first VCR. My mom loved film, but she was not picky about what she watched. She watched a little bit of everything. And I did that for a lot of years. And I've gotten to the point where I think I've seen enough crap. And I really want to kind of focus on what I consider quality things. There are millions of movies out there that I could watch. But having, as you mentioned, the curated aspect of the Criterion Collection, it's almost like an art museum. You don't walk into the London Museum of Art and say, I want to see everything. I mean, the people that work there have said, here's the best representation of what we do for this era, for this artist, and stuff like that. And I really feel like that's what Criterion does. I mean, they're presenting you what they consider a well-curated batch of movies. Am I going to love every single one of them? Absolutely not. Am I glad that I have it on my shelf? Absolutely. Even if I'm watching another movie and it's something comes up, it's like, hey, that reminds me of that other movie that I didn't like so much, but I'm going to give it another try. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
there are a lot of Criterions that I have learned to love over the years. When I first started collecting them in 2002, and I mentioned 8.5, I brought that home, I popped it in, I watched it, and I went, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah.
I've learned how to watch these type of movies, and I really, really, really am pleased that I've gone down this path and that Criterion has helped me do that. So as far as the collecting goes, I really love the idea of having a library, and I could have 3 million discs on the shelf, but as we say, our wives and girlfriends and our partners, not necessarily going to like that. But if it's a nice, well-presented selection, I'm very, very pleased to have done this. And if people that say you're just collecting, no, I'm not. I'm collecting something that is allowing me to learn more about film, and it's focused. And, when you talk about streaming, every once in a while we'll try to watch something on streaming, whether that, it freezes up or the quality goes way down. And I'll turn to my girlfriend, Margaret, and I'll say, that's why we collect physical media, because we want to be able to watch this on a dark and stormy night.
Yeah, it's also that they call Criterion boxes film school in a box.
Right.
If you think about collecting, that's film school in a cabinet. I mean, that's almost like a full education there. And I've had some formal education in film studies, and I've probably learned, in fact, no, probably. I've definitely learned way more from Criterions than I have from classrooms. So,
yeah, it's one of the reasons we do this show is to, delve into a movie and get into the supplements. I mean, I'm consider myself a self-studying cinephile. I never took a film class.
Same
so,
here.
That's what I'm doing. I'm learning this through these artistic people. And the other thing with collecting is just the rewatchability. I mean, like you said, Keith, you could watch a movie like 8.5 and just be like, what the heck did I just see? But if you revisit it, and I think it also ties into the social aspect. Someone else says, I love this movie. You can connect with them. Why did you love this movie? You rewatch it, you may rediscover it.
And I think one thing with the Criterions is they tend to, your appreciation of them changes with age. So I just rewatched Yi by Edward Yang a few weeks back, and it was my third watch, but it's a different part of my life, and I appreciate it in a different way. I loved it all three times, but I loved it in a different way this time. And you could say the same with Ozu. I wouldn't say is an acquired taste, but I think you have to live a little bit to really appreciate Ozu. So that's the same for me. But yeah, no, I like the analogy of it being like an art museum, because when I invite people over, really my film library is sort of a library of the best of film history, I'd say. Or maybe that's
well, it's still one group of people's perception of that, but it's right. Still, as I'll use the word again, it's still very well curated. There's a lot of stuff in there that is just accepted as classics. There are others that they are saying, I want to, you know, as you said in the Jonathan Terrell interview, somebody has to stand up for this movie. Mm-hmm. So it's somebody saying, right. You know, let's reassess this movie. Let's see if we can get a bunch of people out there to really see what the positiveness of this movie is. And, you know, even though we're in a monetary relationship with Criterion, as far as, you know, buying these things, you know, we really are kind of all on a journey together where we're saying, you know, let's rally around this group of, well, what is it now, 1,200 movies, mm-hmm. but, right. You know, and
1,400 if you
1,400, yes,
if you
exactly.
listen to Jonathan, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just there's a huge community aspect to it, and, you know, and I love, you know, I'll even say that I love the idea of purchasing these, not only to love them for myself, but to support Criterion as a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You got to keep them going. So, yeah, it's something that I think of Criterion this way. I know I've mentioned it before, but, you know, for me, and it started with seeing Seven Samurai and Jules and Jim, this seed was planted that there is a great bunch of work out there, artwork that is, you know, wasn't accessible really until Criterion brought it to our shores. So to me, that's really, they do a lot of other things. You know, of course, they added, they really built the physical media portion with the commentaries and special features. But for me, it's getting the rights to those films and showing me that, you know, international art that I wouldn't have seen otherwise on the big screen, but also, you know, especially in my home.
Oh, yes. And we were talking about the rating system, and I think for cinephiles, the BFI Sight and Sound 250 is generally the benchmark for international films. And if you look at the 250, I didn't calculate it, but I would wager a guess that 90% could be on the Criterion Collection. So I think they really do represent the best of film history.
Oh, yeah. Much more than the AFI, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So we wanted to move a little bit into, we talked about levels of completion a little bit, but wanted to kind of expound on that some more. And we thought we'd start with Aaron because of his blog. And he also has recently been doing the Flamenco. Aaron?
Well, not physically, but as a matter of fact, I just received the Flamenco trilogy yesterday, which I've never seen, but it's sort of a, if you collect the Eclipse series, which I think Trevor and David would appreciate. That's a subset of Criterion. I'm sure probably everybody's aware, but they're all readily available except for that one. Went out of print.
Yeah, it's the only out of print
one. Carlos Sara. He did Cria Cuervos, a number of things. But yeah, so I ordered that. I actually found a price that I liked, and I jumped on it. I wasn't planning on it, and so now I'm on my way to be an Eclipse completist, which I actually just began earlier this year. But yeah, my level completion, we talk about Blu-ray, DVD, Laserdisc. For me, I collect the Blu-rays, and that's because, you know, like I mentioned, I started with DVDs, and I will still keep those. But I really, really got into it with Blu-ray, and I think I saw that there are something like 240, 250 Blu-rays that have not yet been upgraded, and I think 150 that have been, and that's a rough number. But I think eventually they, majority, I mean, not all of them, we're not going to get a upgrade of Tanner 88, for example, probably not. We're not going to get an upgrade of the others. But I think it's just easier to collect Blu-ray, and since those are the formats I prefer, that's the way I go. So I'm almost complete on Blu-ray. I'm missing Pierre Le Fou, and I'm missing Blue is the Warmest Color, but that's because...
We're still waiting.
Yeah. And I'm getting close to maybe the next sale. I might just plunge and just to say I'm complete. And probably with the Eclipse series, I probably with the next big sale, maybe the next flash sale and the Barnes & Noble, I'll probably get there. And then I'm going to be rich.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, I would say to, you know, talk to what you talked about, Aaron, with the Eclipse. I'll be Eclipse complete, I think, with the November sale. Planning on using some coupons. I have probably 2/3 to 3/4, so planning to be Eclipse complete then. I started that really last year. So for me, it was a good time to stock up when you start getting those 30% off coupons. But as far as, you know, really Criterion collecting and completion, I really started with the Blu-rays. I jumped in, as I said, with Days of Heaven and started collecting a few Blu-rays. But then I really started getting into this thing they called Criterion and got the itch to collect the out-of-print DVDs. Because to me, what I figured was, part of it was probably subconsciously the spine number, although I might not readily admit that. I think it is I wanted to get the best presentation of a film that even though it was particularly out of print from Criterion. So I wanted to have their special features and get that DVD release, even if there was a better Blu-ray out there. I got that itch. And so I'm currently out of print DVD complete. I have a few others too, but am complete there. And that's an itch that I have to keep scratching whenever something does go out of print, like the Paul Robeson set that went out of print. Recently, I got the Nanook of the North. Had to get that. I'm also out of print Blu-ray complete, I should say, because the only ones I really had to buy was at that point for out of print was The Third Man, because when I started collecting, I was getting all the out of print ones anyway. Like, I already had The Man Who Fell to Earth when it went to, you know, out of print. So I'm as of July, I'm Blu-ray complete, except for I don't have The Man Who Knew Too Much, because I have that in a Hitchcock set. I'll probably pick it up, you know, in November. And I do also have a just mention on the completion side. I don't know if I'm going to delve into this, but I do have a few laser discs. I mentioned to Keith a little while ago. There's a college locally, it's Middlebury College. They have a film course, and they smartly have quite a large collection, and they were showing Laserdiscs for a long time. And I happened upon them in Craigslist, where they said, got some free Laserdiscs. And they were nice enough to offer a Laserdisc player, too. Mm. So, and it's funny, they got rid of all the other Laserdiscs first, but they kept the Criterion ones. And what they were doing is they were, you know, purchasing DVDs to replace the Laserdiscs. So eventually I did pick up most of what they had on Criterion Laserdiscs. I think a few of them, people had kind of gotten into them. Most of them are ones that are currently still available on DVD and Blu-ray. I think some people may have grabbed some of the ones that weren't, you know, in the, that were out of print and not available in other formats. Or they just weren't ones that the college happened to have. So small collection so far of the laser discs.
Great.
How about you, Keith?
Well, first, before I even mention or answer that, I want to put out a little plug for Tanner 88. I'd love to see that on Blu-ray, because I was actually thinking about it the other day. That, you know, Robert Altman did the second Tanner series on Sundance in 2004, and I've always That's Tanner on Tanner. That's what it was called, right?
I have that too. Yeah.
I always thought that maybe they would put that out as one complete collection, and maybe next year as an election year they might, or at least this is my request for that.
Yeah, that just came off the top of my head. I probably shouldn't have made that snipe, but it does seem to be. I think it's fantastic, but it does seem a little bit dated and maybe not something that would sell today. But you know, I'd be thrilled with an upgrade. So.
Oh, of course, I understand that, but. You know, as far as completion goes, I've kind of tipped my hat to some of this already as far as where I'm at. I've been DVD complete since 2006. I've been Blu-ray complete since they started coming out in 8 or 9 or whatever it was. When I started the Facebook page about 15 months ago, I asked people, you know, what sort of completion level are you at? And you know, I put in the options of DVD, Blu-ray, you know, first edition, second edition, or whatever type of options like that. And at the time, and I can't believe I didn't realize this, people were responding saying, what about Laserdisc? And I remember at one point, to bring up Dave Blakesley again, Criterion posted a picture of his collection on their site a few months ago. And, you know, people jumped all over him, too, saying, how can you say you're Criterion complete if you don't have the laser discs? And so it really kind of, you know, brought in this question of what is completion? And, you know, you guys have answered yours. And I've kind of refined mine over the last year or so. Because last Christmas I decided that I was going to collect all the Laserdiscs as well. And over the last 8 or 9 months, I've purchased about 50 or 60 of them on eBay. They've all been in pretty darn good shape. A couple I've been disappointed in. But I realized that the type of collector that I wanted to be with Criterion was a best version collector. So, you know, if there's a Laserdisc out there for, now I'm going to draw a blank, but now if there's a Laserdisc out there for, you know, Spartacus, you know, if I've already got the DVD of Spartacus for Criterion, I don't really see any reason to get the Laserdisc. So I've really focused this on best version. So if it's only on Laserdisc, I'll get Laserdisc. If it's only on DVD, I'll get the DVD. And if it all comes all the way up to Blu-ray, obviously I'm going to replace the DVD with the Blu-ray, and, you know, maybe even have to get rid of a Laserdisc as well. You know, that's my little tip of the hat to trying not to be too much of a hoarder. You know, then you're really, I think, getting into the collecting side of things if you have 3 or 4 versions of the same movie. But, you know, if I focus on the best version, I think that's where I'm comfortable right now, and it works for me very well.
Yeah, it's probably where I would go too, Keith, is, you know, if I was going to really get into Laserdiscs, I'd do the same thing. If it wasn't available in a different format, I completely hear you.
Hey.
So, we've been talking about Criterion and collecting, and we referenced it a little bit about how our collecting bug kind of affects our family and really their reactions of friends and family, because, you know, you often get that question of what is a Criterion, what makes a movie a Criterion, why is this important, why do you want to collect this? So interested in your thoughts, Keith, on this.
That's always a struggle. I do want to give a shout out to my wonderful partner Maggie, who allowed me to bring my collection from the dark recesses of the bedroom into the living room as of yesterday, and she even helped me dust all of them. So I have the I have the perfect mate. So
she's a keeper.
Good
too.
Good job, Maggie. Yeah. If she listens, way to go.
Oh, she'll hear this. Yes. But you know that is hard. I mean, when people will say to me, they very rarely ask about a specific movie. They ask me, what's a Criterion? And there's the short answer, which really doesn't get at it. It's, you know, it's a distribution label that puts out what they consider classic movies, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of get some blank stares from that. But there's also the long version. And I've gone into 10, 15-minute explanations of what Criterion is, the history of Criterion, how studios work with them, you know, the history of Janus Films, all the stuff that we're kind of talking about today. And in many cases, I get the same blank stares. So it's a hard one to talk to people about unless they truly are interested and truly want to know what you're talking about. I've gotten my family, they kind of look at me as it's my cute little hobby. But people are never, at least the people that I hang around with, are never really that interested in watching the movies. The other question I get is, and this one is always so hard to answer, is somebody will mention a movie, and the one that just popped into my head was American Beauty. Well, that was an Oscar winner. How come that's not a Criterion?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a million reasons why it's not a Criterion, but I think it's a hobby that is quite different from what most people, goes into their, what's in their purview every day, that it can be hard to explain. And it kind of keeps us maybe off in the corner a little bit more, but that's why it's great to get together on podcasts like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Keith. I should mention that Keith is the only person on our podcast that I've actually met in person, and we met three times, right, Keith?
Three times, yes.
Three times, mm-hmm. Yes. So, so my family and friends, I think it's the... I don't talk about it much. You know, I work at a company in my office. You won't find any references to Criterion on my poster, my walls, my screenshot on my computer or desktop background on my computer. But a couple people know, and I've found, like you, Keith, I have trouble explaining. I remember one time somebody, when they realized the money that went into it, because it is an expensive hobby.
That's a big one.
And in fact, yeah. I got to give a shout out to Rod Penaflor. He calculated what this was at MSRP, what the entire collection would cost without taking into account the non out of print stuff. And I think he came up with a number of 19,000.
Yeah, I was actually not very pleased that Rod did that, but thanks anyway, Rod.
I know. In reality, it's probably
don't show your family
considerably less than that for us, definitely for me. I don't share it with my workplace much, just because I just want to avoid that. I have some closer friends that I do, I do share it more. Family, of course my dad, he knows because.
That's great.
That's what got me into it. What's funny about that is I didn't tell him that I was completing it. He recently sold all his Criterion all his Laserdisc period, and he didn't ask me, and the Criterions all went first. In fact, Keith, you might have bought some.
Maybe.
I want them back.
Every time you tell that story, I just get this empty feeling in my gut. But
it's okay. Yeah, I've moved on. I would never watched them, so it's fun. It would have just, right. I think you and I are different in that respect. For me, in my personality, since I wouldn't watch it, and since I'm more of a high def kind of person, that would be closer to the hoarding direction. Whereas this is more collecting. But so yeah, I keep it to. Somewhat to myself, but online I'm very open about it. So what about you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, to the question of reactions of friends, I almost always have to explain if I mention Criterion. It's why it doesn't often come up in conversation, really. But if they do ask, they hear that I'm into something or, you know, talking about the podcast, I'll explain the collection as it's really, again, as I said before, a way of bringing, you know, I try to keep it simple, foreign films to theaters and to discs that you wouldn't see otherwise. Also, you know, if they show some interest in what that means, I might mention some of the great directors, I mentioned Kurosawa, Bergman, or titles like Seven Samurai. And of course, at that point, it's often where I get a lot of blank stares and it just kind of stop and really, you know, don't really go much further. But, you know, I do to try to tie it back to people, because, you know, you do have a lot of people that aren't as passionate as us. You know, everyone has their own passions.
Of course.
Like, you know, if you're going to talk about cars, I'd give you a blank stare because I just, you know, I don't know other than, you know, driving and oil changes. But I do try to relate it to them a little bit, like to mention certain titles in the collection. We don't have a lot of horror in the collection, and some of the horror ones would be considered more thriller, but you know, trying to relate a genre to say, hey, you know, if you like these movies, there's some great additions of, for the example of horror, you know, Don't Look Now or Rosemary's Baby or The Devil's Backbone. And maybe I'd start with Rosemary's, but kind of move into, you should see Don't Look Now or you should see The Devil's Backbone.
Repulsion.
Yes. Great example that, you know, a lot of people probably, you know, wouldn't have heard of. So that's how I kind of relate it to them. And, you know, you hope that once in a while you bring it up in conversation and you really spark someone's interest and they really get into it. I mean, I do feel a little lucky. I'll mention that I do have a couple of friends locally that we get together. We try to get together at least once a month to watch a movie. And a lot of times it is a Criterion edition, because one of my local friends, Keith Silva, and another friend, Alex Martin, and his wife are into film quite a bit. And we'll sometimes watch Criterion editions, like we just watched recently Thief. The Michael Mann film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do have that going for me. So, any other final thoughts, guys, about, you know, just the cult of Criterion collecting?
I wanted to mention, Aaron, when you mentioned, you know, doing things more on the high def side, and I definitely like that. The best comment I've ever gotten, I think it was from a brother, I don't remember, whichever family member it was, they put some thought into this, because I was showing my system with my high def television and the surround sound and did all this, and he looked at me and he said, "Now let me get this straight. You have all of this, but yet what you watch are square shaped black and white movies with subtitles in mono." Mm-hmm. And I didn't have much of a response to that, because it was true.
That's funny.
Well, what's funny is, as I told my boss, and he said, "So you watch movies with subtitles in black and white by choice?"
Yeah, I've heard that.
Right. So, right. Yeah, I often, I've mentioned to my friend Keith, you know, and I reference some of these black and white movies, you know, it's about the inky blacks, mm-hmm. you know, those
of
deep
course,
blacks
the
of
deep
high definition.
Inky blacks.
It really does make a difference with a lot of these. Some not as much as others, but for say something like La Ventura, huge
difference. Beautiful.
Yeah, you almost have to do a comparison. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd almost have to just, you know, if they were into it, just show the DVD versus the Blu-ray or Laserdisc. But
or any Bergman for so.
Oh yes,
right. Well, thanks guys. Thanks for talking about collecting Criterion. And this is another one where we'd love to get additional feedback. We talked about the Facebook groups and would love some emails, you know, some tweets about it. But before we mention that, just as we're wrapping up, we want to talk about our next show. As Aaron mentioned, we're going to be talking about Hiroshima Mon Amour. We are going to have a guest, Martin Kessler, who folks might remember was on our second show, My Life as a Dog, as I was not able to be on that except remotely. Martin is at Movie Kessler. Folks want to follow him there. And tying into Hiroshima Mon Amour, we have a subtopic of movies across borders. So you might think about movies like the Before trilogy, Ali, Furies the Soul, the Fassbinder movie, My Beautiful Laundrette. There's mm-hmm. others you can think about. So, and folks can find the schedule of our films on the podcast page on the Criterion Blues website. So
yeah, that'll be a tough show to keep short, because I'm already wanting to talk about Hiroshima Mon Amour. So yeah,
we might go longer with the movies and keep the subtopic shorter, but we'll see. So, Keith, again, thank you so much for being here. You were the perfect guest to have on this show. And, you know, we didn't get to review a movie, but we got to talk about something near and dear to our hearts. So thanks again for being on here.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks very much, guys. This was a lot of fun. And I think I have the podcasting bug now. So we'll see what happens.
Nice.
Uh-oh. We have a competitor,
all it
right?
takes is, yeah. All it takes is one. It's just like buying a Criterion movie. All it takes is one.
Exactly.
And starts that rabbit hole. So where can folks find you online, Keith?
Well, the best place to find me would be the Criterion Completion blog, which is CriterionCompletion.com. The Facebook page, you know, search for Criterion Completion. I'll let you in. Love to have you there. It's very similar to the blog, but we get into a little more of just day-to-day stuff with people and their collections. And you can also find me on Twitter at KEE Productions. And I'm going by The Completionist right now, which is my new made-up word.
I love your avatar, by the way. His avatar is Jean Renoir, of course.
Oh, yes, the Richard Avedon photo. It's very, very striking.
It is, yes.
Where can folks find you online, Aaron?
Well, they can find me here. They can find me on Twitter at AWest505. They can find the show at CriterionCU. And I've noticed that we've both been responding to tweets there, so that's fun. CriterionBlues.com is my personal blog, and it's the show blog. I just put up a post yesterday about My Beautiful Laundrette, and probably have one coming up on State of Siege. And yeah, that's it.
And folks can find me, Mark Kearney, at Mark Kearney. It's MarkHurne. I'm also on Letterboxd, trying to get some updates there, Mhurne. And we'd love your feedback, as we said, via email, feedback@CriterionCloseUp.com. Send us your tweets. We'd love some more iTunes reviews. Any way you can interact with us would be much appreciated. And again, next week we'll be talking about Hiroshima Mon Amour. So that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you in Hiroshima.